Back we are, John Carlson Talk Radio 570 KVI. Well, the most famous Republican in Washington, D.C. right now is not a senator, not a House member. In fact, it's not even an office holder. The most famous Republican in Washington, D.C. right now is Grover Norquist, head of Americans for Tax Reform. Check out ATR.com, by the way, ATR.com. And I'm looking at a huge flurry of articles here. My favorite in National Review this morning, Hating Grover, which means people in Washington, D.C. piling on Grover Norquist. Matthew Dowd from ABC News. Grover Norquist is an impediment to good governing. The only good thing about Grover Norquist is that he was named after a character from Sesame Street. Close quote. You've got Warren Buffett taking a shot at him in the New York Times. The bottom line, what is Grover Norquist famous for? For popularizing something that is simple and straightforward. We were just talking about this, making things simple, clear, and coherent. That is the taxpayer protection pledge that candidates make to their constituents in their states or districts. And now they're trying to get congressmen and senators on the Republican side to break that pledge. And Grover Norquist is saying, not so fast, which is why he's become the center of a fiscal debate storm in Washington, D.C. Grover Norquist, thanks for making the time to be here on KVI.
Absolutely. Good to be with you, John.
Okay, so has there ever been such a flurry of news coverage about you in the last 48 hours or in the last 20 years as we've seen in the last 48 hours here?
Well, we saw this once again, once before, 2 years ago when there was a drive by Clinton, Carter, about Obama to raise taxes, and he wanted to increase the debt ceiling. Republicans were arguing you shouldn't increase the debt ceiling, but rather you should, if you're going to increase the debt ceiling, you had dollar for dollar had to cut spending. And Obama said, let's raise taxes instead. And so we had a knockdown, drag-out fight, and of course, 90% of Republicans have signed the pledge not to raise taxes, and they said, we're not going to raise taxes. Let's look at cutting spending. We actually won that fight. We got $2.5 trillion in spending restraint into law. Now, Obama wants to undo that, but it was written into law, $2.5 trillion in spending restraint. And so there was, back then, there was a pile on the taxpayer protection pledge and me personally, from those people who wanted not to reduce spending, but to raise taxes. And we're there again. I mean, Obama wants to raise taxes to keep spending money. And Republicans would like to rein in spending. And since neither party has control, the Democrats have the Senate and the presidency, but the Republicans have the House of Representatives, there's kind of a standoff, and each one is throwing brickbats at the other. Obama wants a $1.6 trillion tax increase. That's what he demands. And he says he'd like to cut spending, too, although the only spending cuts he has written down are ones that are already in law. He wants credit for things that have already happened. And he wants credit for saving $800 billion for not occupying Iraq for the next several decades. Well, since Iraq kind of threw him out of the country, that's not a budget savings. That's reality. I mean, that's really cheating on that one.
In other words, what they're calling budget savings are just phantom savings. They're not savings at all.
I don't think there are any savings in his budget, any real ones. And he actually, with his $1.6 trillion in tax increases that he wants, remember, he's going to get $800 billion from rich people. So where's the other $800 billion coming from? And he runs up with his budget. He actually wrote down a budget. No Democrat voted for it, which gives you some idea of how unpleasant it is. Nobody wanted to vote for it before the election. It runs up $8 trillion in debt over the next decade after all of the tax increases on high-income people that he says he wants. If those were taken into effect, you still have $8 trillion. So while we're talking today about, you know, should we tax rich people and William, you know, Buffett weighs in and stuff like that, that's not what the fight is. You know, that's like stealing all of the jewelry off the tellers in the bank. The point is to get to the vault, and the vault is the middle class, where most of American money is, and they want an energy tax or a VAT. That's the game here.
A VAT is a national sales tax.
Yes, they're going to, just like they have in Europe, you cannot through the income tax raise enough money to have the kind of size of government that Obama's looking at that exists in France or Britain or Germany or some of the European countries. You have to have a broad-based energy tax, which you could sell as being green. But of course, that is a massive increase on the middle class. How does Obama and the Democrats, who claim to care about the middle class, who promised in two elections they wouldn't tax middle-income people, how do they excuse themselves and get into the vault? And that's by making a lot of noise about taxing rich people. And they either do that or they don't do it. But whether they do it or don't do it, they go, oops, still not enough money. And then they go straight for the middle class. And if Republicans put their fingerprints on a tax increase for anybody, how do they then draw the line and say, well, we agreed to tax increase number one, but on principle, we're against tax increase number two. So Obama's not interested in raising taxes on rich people. He wants to raise taxes on the middle class. That's where the money is. He's not interested in raising taxes on rich people. He could have done that when the Democrats ran Congress in 2009 and 2010. Any day for 2 years, he could have raised taxes on rich people. Didn't. Why not? He wants the Republicans to put their fingerprints on that tax increase. He's not interested in raising taxes. He's interested in raising taxes with Republican fingerprints on it so that he can crush them in the next election. And he can turn to the middle class and say, well, sorry about that. Do you see what the Republicans did to you?
Yes. No, and it also insulates them against charges that they're the tax hike party because, well, after all, this was bipartisan.
Absolutely. And I think the president's in a much weaker position than he does. And remember, he's misjudged before. He overestimated his mandate in 2008. He beat a war hero by 7 points, right? I mean,
right.
Everybody should do what he wants. He shows up, he does TARP II, $350 billion to his favorite banks, and then $800 billion in stimulus spending, and then a trillion that he added to the budgets over the decade. Massive new spending, and the Tea Party was a reaction to spend too much, which I would have told you just before it happened, you cannot get the American people riled up about spend too much. You can get them unhappy about taxing that follows spend too much, but they will wait until they're taxed before they get angry. They didn't. They didn't wait. They saw it coming a mile away. I was completely wrong because it had never happened before, Grover, it doesn't mean it might not, but it won't happen. Well, 4 years later, he gets elected by 3% of the vote. He's not running against a war hero. He's running against a former governor, nice guy, but, you know, former governor from Massachusetts, not quite war hero. And he's now polling not at 70%, which is what he was when he started to lose support back in 2008. He's starting at about 51-52%. Support. He's now going to turn spend too much into tax increases, and he's particularly targeting all successful small businesses. Several million small businesses will get hit by his tax increases. He says he's taxing the rich. He's taxing small businesses, and that is going to generate a Tea Party Part Two. I don't know if they're going to give it a new name that dwarfs anything we've seen. And I just. My advice to the Republican Party is don't be standing in the picture when he signs a bill to do this, because it'll end up worse than 1990, where Bush signed a tax increase, and there was a great deal of anger then, and he couldn't get himself reelected. And Bush was a very successful president, Bush 41, managed the collapse of the Soviet Union, kicked Iraq out of Kuwait and didn't get stuck occupying the place for a decade.
Actually had the highest presidential approval rating of any president for a short time, 91%.
Yes, one small hole in the bottom of the boat, one small problem. He raised taxes, which was two things. One, he promised he wouldn't, so he broke his word. And two, he raised taxes supposedly in order to get spending down, but the Democrats took every dollar he raised in taxes, spent it, and more. So he didn't help reduce the deficit. He just made the government bigger. And Perot could not have run for president with any credibility if Bush hadn't damaged his own relationship with Republicans and independents with the tax increase. So Obama's trying to trick Republicans into signing onto a tax increase. That's what he wants to do instead of reining in spending. Republicans have a fine plan, the Ryan budget. The president doesn't have a real budget. Why would any Republican sit here and fantasize about what tax increases you might give Obama so he can keep spending, when we ought to be demanding that he write down a budget that comes to balance and that reins in spending as much as the Ryan plan? Now, if he wants to have different priorities, we can negotiate from that. But he has nothing on the table.
Grover Norquist.
Republicans. Yeah.
Grover Norquist is my guest, president of Americans for Tax Reform, the father of the Taxpayer Protection Pledge, where candidates pledge to their constituents not to raise federal taxes. They can swap deductions for lower rates and whatnot, but no net tax increases. Let me play some of the comments being made in the last few days by Republican senators and House members. This is Georgia Senator Saxby Chambliss.
The pledge I signed 20 years ago was valid then. It's valid now, but times have changed significantly, and I care more about this country than I do about a 20-year-old pledge.
Comments, Grover?
Well, he actually called me and made it clear he didn't quite mean to say that. I think he got on a TV or radio station and got jammed a little bit. He's since tweeted out that he opposes tax increases and wants to have economic growth. But, you know, some of these guys get, you know, you're a senator and somebody says, so you've promised Grover Norquist you're never raising taxes. And they get rattled. Instead of saying, of course not, I made a commitment to the people of Georgia, some of them get defensive. No, I didn't. Which is true. You didn't, okay? And the other day, Cantor, the number two Republican in the House, was asked about the pledge, and he says, look, we're not against raising taxes because of the pledge. We're against raising taxes because it's bad for the economy. And somebody called and said, oh, Grover, you criticized the pledge. And I said, no, he didn't. He said it exactly right. The reason one opposes tax increases is it's bad for the economy. You take the pledge because you're not going to raise taxes.
Here's New York Republican Congressman Peter King.
I agree entirely with Saxby Chambliss. A pledge you signed 20 years ago, 18 years ago, is for that Congress. For instance, if I were in Congress in 1941, I would have signed a supported declaration of war against Japan. I'm not going to attack Japan today. The world has changed.
All right. All right. That's Peter King.
Of all the odd excuses people give for saying that they want to break their commitment to their constituents, the idea that, oh, I promised that a while ago, okay? First of all, the pledge is clear. The pledge is for as long as you're in Congress. It's you know, not for 200 years, but if you're in Congress for 6 years, it's for that 6 years. If you stick around for 10, it's for that period.
It's your declaration that the problem in this country is excessive spending, not insufficient tax rates.
Yes. Yes. Brilliantly put. I will now quote that regularly. That is a wonderful, succinct explanation. And when a congressman says, I'm going to go to Washington and solve problems and reform government so it costs less, not raise taxes to pay for mistakes and errors of the past, that's not sort of like next week. I teased that Senator King, I said, you know, how's his wife feel about this idea that there's a term limit to his promises? Is his bank happy that mortgage? God, that was 20 years ago. He stopped sending me these letters.
Here's South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
I'm willing to generate revenue. It's fair to ask my party to put revenue on the table. We're below historic averages. I will not raise tax rates to do it. I will cap deductions. If you cap deductions around the $30,000-$40,000 range, you can raise $1 trillion in revenue, and the people who lose their deductions are their upper-income Americans. But to do this, I just don't want to promise a spending cut, so I want entitlement reforms. Republicans always put revenue on the table. Democrats always promise to cut spending. Well, we never cut spending. What I'm looking for is more revenue for entitlement reform before the end of the year.
All right. That's Lindsey Graham. What do you think?
Well, the challenge that I've had a long conversation with Senator Graham as well. He just described what he wants, which is fundamental entitlement reform. And if he got that, then he'd support a tax increase. And as I pointed out to him when he said, you know, a 10-to-1 ratio and we'd have to be ironclad and not unreversible. And I suggested to the good senator, I said, you just described a unicorn, something that does not exist in the real world. And you would trade higher taxes for a unicorn. But unicorns don't exist, and you've just agreed to raise taxes in return for Democrat commitment to reform entitlements. Look, the present entitlement mess the Democrats voted for, they created, they nurtured, they like it. Obama doesn't consider this overspending to be a problem to be fixed. He considers it his life's achievement. So why do you think they're going to give it up? And the challenge, of course, for
right. What are they? Yeah. What? Why all the? How come all of the attention is focused on what are the Republicans willing to do in terms of raising taxes? I haven't heard them say what are the Democrats willing to give.
Because the establishment press in Washington D.C. knows perfectly well that the answer to that is nothing. The Democrats want the Republicans to raise taxes in return for nothing, and when Lindsey Graham makes that presentation, which if you listen to the whole thing, he explained that his potential support for raising taxes and breaking his commitment to the voters of South Carolina was only if he got this incredible deal on entitlements, okay? But the New York Times doesn't print that. That's not on TV. When I get asked, well, what about Lindsey Graham? All the reporters say is Lindsey Graham wants to raise taxes. Full stop. Full stop. And you'd think that Lindsey Graham would be old enough to realize that if you're a Republican and you offer to raise taxes in return for, okay, the press person you're talking to and the Democrat you're negotiating shut their hearing aids off after I will raise taxes.
All right.
Done. You've been had. We've got you. We don't care. Next. Okay. He made himself fully irrelevant in the debate to rein in spending, because he told them, I'm going to give you what you want, and then I have a wish list.
Grover,
very
well put, and I appreciate you going out of your way to join us when
sure.
all this stuff is going on around you. I first of all, keep doing what you're doing, because
you.
The people are behind you 100%. Grover Norquist, besides being the head of Americans for Tax Reform, the father of the Taxpayer Protection Pledge, also the author of a great book, called Debacle, Obama's War on Jobs and Growth, What We Can Do Now to Regain Our Future. Thanks very much for joining me here on Talk Radio 570, Grover Norquist.